Good morning and welcome to the Mitchell Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Montrum. It's Monday, December 2nd, the morning after the Redskins' 29-21 win over the Carolina Panthers. That's two in a row. Here to talk about that, it's the one true believer in our playoff destiny, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie, I think you've mistaken me for Scott Allen, who is, of course, the real true believer in our playoff destiny.
So we're not out of it. We're three back in the NFC, four to play.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to be optimistic, I guess this week's game is the toughest one left on the schedule, probably. So a win this week, I think, would really get people talking. It would also make me miserable.
I knew that you were the true believer. Because I hadn't even looked at the schedule.
Yeah, well, they're playing the Packers this week, right?
That's pretty tough.
I think it's the Packers and then three NFC East teams. And as all NFC East teams are currently pretty much uniformly dreadful, the Packers would be the tough one. Let's pause real quick and just take a moment to apologize to everybody. We recorded an episode last week, which is relevant because I'm sure at least one of us, if not both of us, will reference something that was said on that episode, even though the episode was never released. We had major technical difficulties and the resulting file was unlistenable, which is why we're recording a different way this time and we sound a little different. So anyway, if we say something that we talked about last week, just know that, yes, we actually talked about it. You just didn't hear it.
Yeah, I mean, those takes that we had on the Redskins-Lions game and I think Mandalorian episode 3, those are some of the rare takes that have ever been.
Yeah, I'm just glad that my Carl Weathers take will never see air. That's probably for the best for everybody involved, and we can just move on.
So the Redskins beat the Packers on Sunday to get to 4-9, and then they've got the three NFC East teams remaining. I'd actually get excited. Like, the needle would move a little bit. But I'm pleased with what happened yesterday. I mean, that was the first Redskins win this season that was not a sorry win. Like the other two, over winless Miami and Detroit with a guy named Jeff Driscoll at quarterback. This is like on the road against a 500 team, and they were up two touchdowns very late. That's legit.
Yeah. I mean, the easiest thing to say if you wanted to ding this win is that Kyle Allen was quarterbacking the Panthers. But Kyle Allen has actually had a fairly decent season. He's certainly better than the Jeff Driscolls of the world. So, yeah, no, this looks like a good win. The defense actually looked good. Special teams looked good. The running game looked good. It's kind of hard to have anything too obnoxious to say about the actual on-field performance this week.
It did get exciting. I forgot that they were even playing or who they were playing. Like, that's how low the Redskins are registering for me these days. Like, I literally did not know nor care who they were playing this week. So I happened to be at home for the 1 o'clock and I was doing dad stuff around the house and had the Ravens 49ers game on, which is a great game. And my son, who unfortunately seems to be becoming a Redskins fan somehow.
You're so cool.
He flipped the channel and he's like, Redskins are on, because they were playing the Panthers, the local game here in North Carolina. So we did end up watching, like, flipping back and forth for most of the 1 o'clock between those two games. And, yeah, I mean, I saw pretty much what the box score showed, which is that the defense was playing well and Dwayne Haskins was not really doing anything and the running game could not be stopped.
Yeah, the running game looked really good. Haskins, well, one of the things that I think we said last week, so I think it's on the one that people missed, is this idea that, like, I'm just not sure what Haskins is showing that is we're supposed to be building off of. But this week, I even felt a little better about that. I just thought he seems to be getting incrementally better every week, very small increments. And he did nothing this week that, like, distressed me. So maybe if I look at it that way, you know, you could keep building. If you got him a real offensive head coach and, you know, a modern NFL offense, maybe he could do something.
Yeah. And so are you now, like, happy when they win? Or are you, like, what's your emotional state with regard to, you know, draft positioning and firing Bruce Allen, at, you know, as those things are affected by wins and losses?
So So I'm confused by the win. I think my biggest concern with wins is not draft position, because you can screw up a first overall pick. You can, you know, knock a 27th pick out of the park, like whatever. I don't believe that firing Bruce Allen is going to make a lick of difference. I think they should fire Bruce Allen just to improve their sort of, you know, public image and general way people view them. But it doesn't matter. The problem is Dan. The problem has always been Dan. And until they solve that problem, which is never going to happen, it doesn't matter. So that kind of doesn't bother me that much either. What bothers me is the idea that they talk themselves into keeping Callahan as head coach next year.
I hadn't even considered this as a variable.
Yeah. I cannot watch this offense for an entire year. I can't. I cannot listen to him. I find him annoying in the extreme. It's just, I deeply do not want to deal with him once the interim period is over. And I'm terrified that a win streak will make that a reality.
Well, I noticed, it was unsettling yesterday that, he kind of resembled my dad, which is now the second prominent Redskins coach to resemble my dad, the first being Al Saunders. It's a strange mix there. Strange blue.
Well, it sounds like your dad has strong, you know, older white guy energy, which, you know, makes sense.
Get that big granddad energy.
Yeah, exactly.
I did appreciate that Callahan, I don't know who was saying this, maybe it was a broadcaster, it was Twitter, like somebody was like complimenting him for sticking with the run, and I was like, it's all he knows.
I don't think he's not even aware they've introduced the forward pass into football. So, like, sticking with the run isn't that impressive when you think it's your only legitimate option. Yeah, I hate his offense. So that's my big concern. I think you were the
weird
one who
that would be truly strange if they stuck with Callahan. I mean, they'd have to like run the table for that to be in play, right?
Right. But so what if they run the table and they don't get the outside help they need? So they don't sneak into the playoffs at 7-9, but they finish on, I guess it would be, what, a 5-game winning streak?
Isn't that basically what Marty Schottenheimer did when he got fired? They were like 3-8 or something, or I don't remember. It was like something like the first half was dreadful and the second half was pretty good, and they finished close or around 500, and he got fired.
Yeah, they finished at 500, and actually that one turned around with a game against the Panthers also. But he got fired because Snyder wasn't willing to give up control that Marty wanted, or actually he wasn't willing to give Marty the control that they had contractually agreed to. So I think that was less about the wins and more about the main problem with the Redskins organization. So
it gives me this one week of joy where we can at least even talk about like table running and playoff picturing, even if they're 3-9. So I'd just like to thank the rest of the NFC East for being dreadful enough that we're even in position. I looked at like the wild card standing. I think the Redskins are like 5 back in the wild card or something crazy. But in the NFC East, it's unclear.
Yeah, no, they're eliminated. They're eliminated from anything other than winning the NFC East. It's always hard as a fan or you know, somebody who follows a team to put yourself in the shoes of the fans of another team. But, like, the Redskins are struggling in a season where it very quickly became clear to us that they were going to struggle, right? I mean, it's a team that, like, we realized was a bad team a while ago. It has to be devastating to be a Dallas fan right now or to be an Eagles fan right now. I mean, because you look at those rosters on paper, and it's like,
yeah,
you should be much better than what you're putting out there. And that's got to be horrible to deal with.
Yeah, I'm thankful for it. Philly lost to Miami yesterday, and Dallas got their asses kicked by Buffalo at home on Thanksgiving. What a week.
What a week indeed. The other thing about the Redskins right now is that they should, if you get rid of the Bruce Allen situation, which allegedly is putting people off of dealing with the organization, and you get rid of Callahan because he's awful, they should be able to attract at least a somewhat interesting coach, because they have some young talent on actually both sides of the ball. I mean, right now, all the wide receivers they're starting are young, except, as you like to point out, for Terry McLaurin, who you believe is old. If Haskins shows anything,
too.
Yeah, exactly. If Haskins shows anything, he's young. Darius Geis looked remarkable yesterday. I don't know. Like, it's, you could see somebody talking themselves into trying to coach these players.
Well, this is part of why I've been rooting for them to win. You know, it's like, if they go 1-15, it's for a reason. Like, nobody's worth a shit, or very few guys are worth a shit, and you're not going to get anybody that's going to be a good head coach. You're going to have, like, fewer foundational pieces for the future. But now, like, the guys you're talking about, the guys on the defensive side, like Ioannidis, even Sweat has, like, 4 sacks this month. And Allen and Payne, like, you know, you start to see something resembling a future. And I'd much rather have that, thanks to them playing well enough to go, you know, 5-11, than the alternative.
Yeah, I think my dream is that they put up, you know, 24 points a game for the rest of them. They look good. They get better and better each week, but they don't win. Because I'm really worried that he's going to keep Callahan.
Right. These guys could look good and lose. That's, like, obvious. Yes, of course. But this is, like, the first game. This is, like, the first game, I mean, win or lose, that was, like, a quality game, right?
Yeah.
Was there a good loss on this? I can't even remember a good loss. The two wins were, like, as bad as wins could be, and then all bad losses.
Well, this was just the first one where I genuinely felt like we were watching a professional football team. Like, you know, the punt that they managed to down on the one where the coverage guy did the thing where he, like, jumps and bats the ball back while he's still airbound before he touches the end zone, and the other guy downs it. Actually went out of bounds, but the guy was there to down it. Like, I feel like that's the type of play that they haven't made in a year or more. It was just this sort of, like,
I just looked it up. They have not made that play since 1991.
It was great. So, like, the little things like that, it was like, oh, we're watching a team that is good. But so then this leads to an obvious follow-up question, which is, if I'm saying the team looked well-coached and the young players are improving, why wouldn't I be okay with Bill Callahan? Like, isn't he the one leading the coaching?
What's the track record on Callahan as a head coach? I mean, there's a reason he hasn't been a hot coaching prospect since 2004, right?
Well, I think he's been – yes, that's correct. I think he did not do well in his interim head coaching stint in Oakland. Then he went back to college. I think he's also one of those guys who's been viewed as, like, a great position coach and coordinator not really head coaching material for whatever reason, like a Rob Marinelli type, that kind of thing, Wade Phillips, those guys who are uniformly agreed to be really good. Yeah. Your favorite. I still think he's going to come back and be the head coach here. I still think there's a situation in which Dan Snyder looks at who's successful and looks at the Ravens and extrapolates, well, they have a special teams coach or a special teams coordinator as their head coach, and they're hugely successful, so I'll just bring back my guy. And then Danny Smith is back in your life, Jamie.
Could you imagine if, like, the Redskins actually got the hot coaching prospect? You know, like, if the Redskins were a good enough franchise or a desirable enough job that they could get, like, the D coordinator for the 49ers, whatever that guy's name is. You know, like, the Redskins aren't going to get that guy. The guy they keep showing on the sidelines.
Have I told you my theory about who the Redskins are going to get?
Is it a Gruden?
It is not a Gruden.
Is it the strength and conditioning Gruden?
Oh, Deuce Gruden. No, I hadn't considered him. No. Here's my theory.
Deuce,
right?
Sorry, I thought you said Deuce, which is even funnier.
Yeah, well, you know, that's down to the audio quality of this new recording medium. No, here's my theory. Check this out. Who is the hottest offensive team in the NFL right now, aside from the Ravens?
I was going to say the Ravens, and you threw me for a loop. Who is the hottest offensive team?
I think it's the Titans. I actually don't know that they stayed hot this week. But it's tight.
Yeah, no, they scored like 30 points, yeah.
And they're making Derrick Henry look good. They're making, Ryan Tannehill finally look good. Do you know who their offensive coordinator is?
Oh, gosh, I can't wait. Is it someone out of the McVay coaching tree?
Kind of, but not really. It's better and worse than that. It's I believe his name's Arthur Smith. He's the son of one of the Redskins minority owners. He accelerated quickly through the coaching ranks. He was a quality control coach in Washington 2008. He's bounced around. I think he was a tight ends coach last year, and got bumped up to offensive coordinator kind of quickly. And people were sort of surprised and thought it might have something to do with his name or with his family. But he has turned out to, in fact, be perhaps a good offensive coordinator. So you've got the Redskins ties. You've got the weird nepotism. You've got the current hot offense. And you've got the chance to sort of do it as a makeup for letting McVay leave. If you get this guy back at a crucial young moment, it sort of offsets losing McVay. And that's who I think your next head coach is.
Okay, this is the first I've heard of this, and I'm on board. I'm on board with whoever that guy is, instead of Bill Callahan or Danny Smith.
Oh, well, I mean, yes, absolutely. And I'm neither so much pro nor con this guy. I don't know that much about him. There's so many of those little ancillary things that make sense to me, that, like, reasons that he would come here, reasons that they would know he exists, that it feels feasible to me for some reason.
Yeah. I like that. That's fine. I still am curious as to how the Redskins ran for 200-something yards yesterday. Because it wasn't – I mean, every box score I've looked at in the couple of games I watched, the leading rusher would have, like, you know, 12 carries for 29 yards, whether it was Geis or Peterson. And yesterday both of them were, like, 10 for 100.
Yeah. Geis was averaging 12 yards a carry, and Peterson was averaging something like 8. I don't know. And a part of me wonders if it has to do with Morgan Moses going out. Like, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. But hey, great news if you can get it. Did you see either live or in highlights, Geis's stiff arm?
I saw that live and got heavy John Riggins 4th-and-1 vibes.
That is an old school reference that I admire. I was just impressed.
I mean, it was the same spot on the field. You know, like that kind of off the left side, and just as he was breaking into the clear and drives the guy into the ground, the only difference was he didn't quite get to the end zone.
No, but I mean, that's
also it wasn't the Super Bowl. It wasn't the Super Bowl as well was the difference.
Yeah, that's also a crucial difference. I don't think it was 4th down either.
There's a couple differences.
Minor differences. Also, the guys look different. That was cool. Like, that was fun. There was just some fun stuff this game. And it was really refreshing to enjoy watching a Redskins game. It was really just a pleasant experience.
I can't wait for Geis to get drafted in, like, the first round of fantasy next year and then have either, like, an injury or just a shitty season.
Absolutely. Just get hit by a meteorite at the, you know, 4th preseason game. Absolutely.
I have one more question. How did Tressway have a 79-yard punt? I missed this. I saw it in the box score. 79 yards.
But it was a touchback, right? The 79 yards was a touchback.
Would it like bounce for a long way and roll into the end zone?
It went very far, and then, yes, bounced and rolled into the end zone. Tressway is very good. I really hope he gets All-Pro honors this year, because he deserves them. He's been the best player on this team for 2 years running, so somebody should really give that the recognition it deserves.
I feel like punter is the one position where you can overcome your surroundings and just be graded, like, on the level against all the other punters. You know what I mean? Can we just look at the numbers? Like, whoever is statistically the finest punter, let's just give him the honor.
I guess there's an argument to be made for opportunity, which I think would actually work in Tressway's favor also, because it's not like he's on a team that scores on 90% of their drives or something.
No,
he's out there.
Volume.
He's
yeah.
out there a lot, and he still puts up the numbers. So, yeah, no, I'm with you. Just let's not overthink this, guys. Honor the one deserving Washington Redskins player.
The Hopkins missed a kick, right? Didn't he have, like, a blocked kick?
It was either blocked or it hit something. I don't remember, but I remember cringing and being unhappy with it. So, yes.
Yeah, and almost factored big in the end. So I started getting – now, keep in mind, I live in Carolina – most of the, like, people I know down here are Panthers fans. Not that it's, like, a rabid following, but, like, yeah, there's a healthy Panthers contingent. I start getting hit with texts as they recover the onside kick. And then, like, a landslide of text as the Panthers get down to the 1 yard line. I can't believe the Redskins stopped them on four straight plays inside the five.
Like, me neither. And
Christian McCaffrey.
And the Redskins were relying on two guys whose names I had literally never heard before yesterday.
Was one of them Odom? Because I saw the guy named Odom had like a sack and a half.
Yeah, there was an Odom and an Orchard, and they both, one was activated from the practice squad, and one was basically signed off the street to fill in. And they both played really well, including on that final fourth down play where Kyle Allen just blatantly missed two wide open receiver in the end zone. That was the point where I realized that I wasn't actually rooting 100% against them. I was actually sort of worried that they might give it up. I wanted at that point to see them hold on to the win. So I guess in answer to your much earlier question, I'm not fully rooting for them to lose at this point. I guess I don't have it in me. I'm not as negative as I thought I was.
Yeah. Good. Glad to hear it. So we have Green Bay next week. I'm not in a position to look up the lines.
Nor am I.
I guess the lines. Also, I don't know where it is. Where is it?
I don't know. It's probably a football stadium somewhere.
Does it really matter? Does it really impact, like, the difference between Green Bay and Washington with this particular team and that, and these particular stadiums? Does it really affect the line where the game is?
Well, I would think Green Bay would get a home field advantage if it's at Lambeau. So it might affect it if it's there. But if it's here, mm-hmm. I can't imagine it makes much of a difference. You know, it's got to be a neutral field here.
I'm going to go, man, I was going to go 7 and then like +3 if it's in Green Bay. But that feels, 10 feels steep, given the Redskins are the juggernaut on a 2-win streak. But, like, I'm also not familiar enough with the lines. Like, are there lines that are, like, 4.5?
Sure. Why not?
I'm going to go 5.5 is at FedEx in Raljohn, Maryland, City of the Future, and 8.5. If it's in Green Bay.
That sounds about right to me. I'm not going to be super different. I'm a little more, I think they're going to give the Redskins a little more credit than they deserve for the 2-game winning streak and maybe go with 4-7, but same general, same kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't
4?
Know.
Come on. The Redskins.
I mean, everybody's terrible this year, though. Oh, I forgot, though. This is the Matt LaFleur revenge game. I really didn't take that into account.
Well, that's the thing. Actually, I might be overvaluing the Packers. I feel like the Packers started stronger and, like, their defense is playing well and Rodgers is clicking, and now they've fallen back a bit. You might be right.
I don't know. And we have no way of finding out right now, so this is going to be a totally unfulfilling segment of this podcast.
Yeah. Pop culture corner. I am not caught up on Mandalorian. I'm through 3 chapters. I assume you're through 4 already.
We are through 4 already, and this time my kids actually not only stayed awake but went back and watched episode 3. So my kids are now on board as well. It's good.
I'm dying to know what this meme is that's like Yoda holding a coffee mug. I've seen this everywhere.
Yeah,
and
man, that
was a little bluish.
I don't know why he looks bluish. The bluishness, I don't think, is a plot point. I don't know what that is. But
maybe
I agree.
It's like the contrast of whatever somebody's screen that they were grabbing that from.
Yeah, no, because on the meme version, the first time I saw it, I thought the point of the meme was that he was blue, and I spent way longer than it warranted trying to figure out why they had color shifted him. So, yeah, no, that picture just looks blue. But, yeah, I mean, it's a delightful moment that I'm sure you will enjoy, even having seen it 800,000 times on Twitter already.
All I know is that little baby Yoda is just holding a little tiny mug, and that I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I mean, it's the high point of the episode in some ways.
I did see Frozen 2 last night.
I'm behind on this one. My wife and daughter went with another mom and daughter for like a girls' night. So my son and I are kind of like out of the cultural conversation. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, they kind of expand the Frozen universe a little bit, expand the world. I was kind of like anxious for whoever's like in charge of like the songwriting, because the songs from the first one were such like a tidal wave phenomenon, you know, where like
yes.
every single kid, especially girls between the ages of like 4 and 8, knew like the entire soundtrack by heart, and there was just like 5 just bangers, like all time great kids movie songs.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's just like if you're a parent of within the past 5 to 10 years, like you know these. The last 5 years, I guess. So like that's a lot of pressure to then be like, okay, we got to come up with some bubblegum, man. Like, how are we going to do this again? And every song or every song scene, you know, I just felt the weight of that, like, that they're going to have to come through with, like, the follow-up, you know? What's the next Let It Go, and do you want to build a snowman and all that? And, they, you know, I think a couple of them might have a chance of ascending to that level, maybe, which is really, you've got to respect it.
You
but
do.
A couple of them were also pretty, you know, fell pretty flat.
I don't know. I find it tough to judge soundtracks the first time, most soundtracks the first time through. Did your family go through a Greatest Showman phase at all?
Oh, yeah. That was another one that was, like, I'd say almost Frozen level.
Yeah.
So slightly older set. Like, that's a little bit old, like a little bit bigger girl.
Yes. But the first time through that soundtrack, I was like, well, that's all a bunch of forgettable stuff that nobody's ever going to sing. And by, like, the second time through, I'm like, well, these are 6 of the greatest pop songs ever recorded in human history.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
Maybe Frozen 2 is a similar a grower. I know the one song that my wife and daughter have been trying to sing since seeing it appears to be way up there in the Idina Menzel range of singing. That
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever it is, neither my wife nor my daughter is quite equipped to do it unaccompanied, and I cannot figure out what the melody of the song is from their renditions.
That would be the song that we listened to on the way home with our entire car at full throat.
Now, the last great kids soundtrack of the last however many years, I think, is Moana. Did you guys do that one?
You know, I don't think we got heavy on that. I know my kids have seen that one, but like, I can't remember a Moana song. That's
oh yeah,
on me.
Yeah. Well, no, it may be on you. It may not be. My daughter got really into the whole Lin-Manuel Miranda experience for a while there, and so when mm-hmm. he did the music for Moana, we listened to that a lot. But again, it was one where it was decent the first time through, and then it's these kids' movies, man. You watch them again and again on, you know, whatever streaming service it is that year, and the next thing you know, it's like you're like, well, I mean. Obviously, Toy Story 4 is an undisputed classic of American cinema.
While on the subject of music, I did put together my best songs of the decade list. It's 400 songs. It's on Spotify. If anyone is interested, I tweeted at some point. You can find it
yeah.
on the timeline.
Send me the link after when you get back in front of your computer, and I'll throw it into the notes on the show so people can find it a little easier. I always enjoy your list. It's usually fun. I've become a big believer over the years that one of the only ways to like find new music is to just find at least 1 or 2 people whose tastes you generally agree with, and then just wholesale steal the songs they listen to. So you're usually a pretty good source for that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I acknowledge that
whatever, you know, Beyonce probably had like some of the best music of the decade, but it's just not like the music I spent a lot of time with. So
right.
Typically you see those big lists like Pitchfork or whatever, it's like the top 10 records on Pitchfork's albums of the decade are probably records that like didn't really do a whole lot for me, you know, and that's not to say that they weren't the best or whatever. They just weren't my best. So I did not order the top 400. But there's a lot of because I had done like basically a best of every year, and I had playlists for those, so it was very easy to go back and pick like a top 40-ish from each year. And I don't know, there's just like a lot of like white guy indie rock on there, white dudes with guitars, like Kevin Morby and Israel Nash and Bon Iver and Michael Now, Wilco, a lot of that shit.
really, I'm embarrassed to admit how long it was before I found out how to pronounce Bon Iver. Really, really shame.
Most of the decade. Most of the decade.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then it's just fun. Like I like listening to like just a playlist on shuffle. You know, like that's typically what I listen to. I don't really listen to albums that much. I don't really listen to like other people's playlists or whatever. I just like, so I like having a kind of a list of like 400 songs that I can shuffle pretty much any time from this extended period.
Well, I'm looking forward to checking it out, and I say that with no sarcasm whatsoever. I always enjoy your end of year lists, and end of decade sounds 10 times better, man.
Yeah,
my
it's crazy
thing,
to think, by the way, it'll be like, that record by, like, The National or whatever wasn't from this decade? You know?
Oh, yeah.
like, oh, Spoon only put out, like, 2 records in the last 10 years? Really?
There's so much stuff where I find out it came out in 2009 and realize that that's 10 years ago, and I'm like, time starts going fast once you get old. It's really weird.
I do think, by the way, there's some artists that really benefit from the 10-year bookend, and or like the 2010 to 2019, and I think like Sturgill Simpson is one of them. I'll just throw that out there, because like, he basically has 4 records. I think 4 records total. Certainly the last 3 are like the big ones, and they all were from this decade. And he was a guy who was kind of like underground credibility, and like people that are into music are well aware of him, but also like he's broken through so that people that are like adjacent to music are aware of him too. And he's kind of peaking at the end of the decade, and now is like that type of dude who's on like a big tour with like $75 tickets.
I think that he's he really is the natural heir to Jason Isbell, who is of course the natural heir to Bruce Springsteen, as just the sports writer's musician of choice. I think he's really tracking for that. And I'm proud of
him. Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that does speak to like Bruce Springsteen really actually being like a Southern rocker, or like people whose sensibilities go towards like Southern rock, or that like kind of blend of like country and folk.
Well,
like,
I think
they really enjoy Bruce Springsteen as well.
I think the three had in common is the sort of storytelling approach to songwriting. I think sports writers really like a narrative and a story, preferably about a scrappy young working class guy who just, you know, has a couple drinks to get through the day and does the best he can in his small town. I think that for some reason sports writers just friggin' love that.
And every few songs, like, that guy has, like, one shot. He's got one shot to make it happen.
Yes. That is 100% the narrative that people like. Also, when did like 60% of white guy with guitar music start to be about whiskey? I feel like just every song I hear that's new is about whiskey.
I think it was with the breakthrough of Chris Stapleton from songwriter to like country chart dominatrix.
That makes sense, because Lord knows every Chris Stapleton song is about whiskey, usually in the title. But yes, man, that makes sense. I'll buy that.
I think I can't remember. I just heard a song the other day called Weed, Whiskey, and Willie, I think it was. It might have been Weed, Whiskey, and Waylon, but it was definitely Weed and Whiskey. And I thought, right on, man.
Hey, what could be more 2019 than that? my big thing lately is, and I know you're not on it, so this is me off on my thing, is Watchmen on HBO. I think it is just the best thing going on television. I think it is somehow my show of the decade, despite coming out here at the trailing end of the decade. I just think it's
show
spectacular.
Of the decade. Whoa.
I think so. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to borrow somebody's HBO login.
Well, now keep in mind, I'm lower on some of the other shows of the decade than other people are, this is square in my wheelhouse because I have read the graphic novel. So if there is a learning curve or a bar to entry that involves previous knowledge, I clear it. And maybe somebody coming to a cold would not like it, but all my friends who have watched it without having read the graphic novel or without having read it in the last decade, all still seem to be liking it. I just think it's so good, man. It's such a well-made TV show.
Wow. How many episodes are you into it now?
They are 7 episodes in, and there's 9 total on this first season. But I kind of think, I think it's going to be 9 and a closed story. Even if they come back for a second season, I think that they're trying to tell this one as a sort of like discrete unit of fiction. If they don't do that, if I'm wrong about that, it could diminish significantly. But if they can pull it off, it's been everything I liked about Damon Lindelof when he worked on Lost and The Leftovers, which I did not watch as much, and a lot of the things that I didn't like as much removed. He's got a really, like, smart, diverse writing staff. It's just different voices. It's different people than I usually hear from in my bubble. It's different actors than I usually see. I really enjoyed everything about it. It's been a really good show.
Wow. And I love that when you're falling in love with a show and you're like most of the way through the first season, that really is the sweet spot. That really is that moment in time that leads you to say something ridiculous, like it's the show of the decade.
Well, yes, and you are correct. There are 2 episodes left that could go horribly off the rails. But I love that moment when you're into anything, where you're just reading everything about it, you're listening to all the podcasts, you're just actively like wondering why more people in your life aren't available to discuss this with.
And
Watchmen is right in that sweet spot for me now. Like I was so excited over the holiday when I would run into somebody who was also watching it just so that we could, you know, geek out about it for 15 minutes or whatever. It's in that wheelhouse for me right now. So
in a weird way, that's what this podcast is for me with the Redskins. But it's not so much a love or whatever. It's like, I just need somebody to talk to you about it. So thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. Glad to be here for you, buddy.
All right. We'll reconvene after Green Bay when the season is over for real this time.
Yeah, sounds good. After they either go to Green Bay or play in Landover, whichever is what's going to happen.
All right, man. Talk to you then.
Talk to you. Bye.